Welcome back to Kicking the Seat, a movie podcast from The Last Guy Anyone Asks. I'm, as always, that guy, Ian Simmons, and you're listening to the audio companion to kickseat.com. It's episode 383 of This Thing of Ours, and if you've come here looking for Oscars coverage, well, you're going to have to wait. I watched the full broadcast last night, something I haven't done in years, and I'm slated to talk about it with friend and friend of the show, David Fowley of Keeping It Real, tonight. So check back here Wednesday morning for our singular wrap-up of Oscar's 91st birthday party. For now, let's journey back a few weeks ago to a conversation I had with Pat the Uber Critic McDonald of HollywoodChicago.com about a film that was never, as far as I know, nominated for anything, and which was probably best forgotten by everybody involved. The year was 1968, the director was Otto Preminger, and the movie was Skidoo, an off-brand acid trip take on the conceit of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, in which some of Hollywood's biggest stars partake in a grand-scale farce. The films are 5 years removed from one another, and I can understand how someone might look askance at the outward appearance of spiritual rust on the gears of Preminger and Company's efforts to deliver a cross-generational fable about the hippies versus square divide. Jackie Gleason and Carol Channing lead a cast that includes almost every major Batman TV villain and Groucho Marx. Skidoo features one of the most brilliantly conceived drug trips ever captured on film that I'm aware of, and manages to squeeze several levels of unexpectedly cutting commentary out of a movie that possibly didn't have such lofty goals in mind. I loved Skidoo, as did Pat, and we both hope the following chat will either make you a believer or reaffirm your faith in one of cinema's most bonkers endeavors. Okay, I've got to run, so I'll check back with you on Wednesday. Oh, by the way, I just watched the Skidoo trailer, which you're about to hear. It features testimonials from counterculture luminaries such as Timothy Leary and Sammy Davis Jr., who says that anybody that don't like that daddy don't like chicken on Sunday. As perfect a summary of Skidoo as anyone can muster. Remember to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Kickseat. You can also like the Kicking the Seat Facebook fan page and subscribe to this very podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. I also invite you to share this episode, leave a comment, and if you're so inclined, drop me a line at kickseat@gmail.com. And until next time, whenever that is, whatever that is, thanks very much for listening to the Kicking the Seat podcast, and take care.
I saw a very funny movie the other night. It is the gassiest, grooviest, swinginest, trippiest movie you've ever seen.
It's Otto Preminger's psychedelic trip,
The Living End.
It's a movie that kids will like.
A while laughing.
They turn on the older generation, get them high. Can you imagine Jackie Gleason turned on and Groucho Marx being God?
Skidoo, Skidoo. The only thing that matters is with who you do. Skidoo. Skidoo, I doodly-doo, I do believe it really is the thing to do. Skidoo, Skidoo, between the one and three there is a two.
I think this movie is going to turn on the country.
Jackie Gleason was Tony Banks, Carol Channing Flo.
It's not odorless, colorless, and tasteless. As a matter of fact, it's Technicolor.
Frankie Avalon, MG, Fred Clark, a tower guard.
I laughed my head off. So if you see a man walking around without his head, that's me.
Michael Constantine Leach, Frank Ocean, the man.
The wildest trip anybody can ever take.
John Philip Law, Stash, Peter Lawford, the senator.
Peter Lawford?
A real swinger.
Burgess Meredith, the warden.
Far out.
George Raft, the skipper. Cesar Romero was head chief.
Every young person in the country should turn on mom and dad by taking to this movie.
Mickey Rooney, Blue Chips Packard.
It's a gas.
Groucho Marx played God in the Otto Preminger film Skidoodly-Doo-Doo-Doo.
Oh, and please, keep off the grass.
And introducing Austin Pendleton as Fred, Alexandra Hay as Darlene. And Loon as God's mistress, well, you know what I mean.
Anybody that don't like that, Daddy, don't like chicken on Sunday.
It'll make you love better. It'll make you feel better. And it's even legal.
Man wasn't meant to fly. He wasn't meant to go up in the sky. Man wasn't meant for such.
So I had to start it off. I wanted to... I always thought we need to have some sort of mark that makes it our pairing, you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to—I do this with my other podcast. It's called The Question of the Week, but I wanted to do it with a little twist here. I wanted to start each show with a question that we will only talk about briefly.
All right.
But it has to do with our life in movies rather than a specific film.
Well, I've never actually starred in a motion picture.
Well, I mean, you know, this it could be associative.
Sure.
But my first question, having to do with the life in the movies, what was that first movie that really grabbed you so hard that you actually wanted to show it to other people, or you wanted to go to any screening, or you wanted to put it in the DVD every day? What was that film?
Well, that's a very different movie than sort of the typical, like, what was the movie that got you into the movies? Because it sort of implies that you would be old enough to share it with people and have
right,
that awareness.
And also, right. It's like a wild thing. It just, like, flames you up so much that you want to either talk about it or get people to see it with you.
You know, I probably had earlier movies than this, but the one that stands out in terms of this question, the big answer to your question, is Pulp Fiction. Because
makes sense.
I saw that movie 14 times in the movie theater.
Wow.
Seconded only by American Beauty, which was 13.
Wow. That's in the theater itself.
In the theater.
You paid to get in and sat in the seat. Wow.
Yeah. And Pulp Fiction came out my senior year of high school. And it was still playing. That was the era of, you know, the mid-90s, where a movie, if it caught on, could just play in theaters and like second-run theaters for like 6 months.
Yeah.
So it was...
It would have a lot of shelf life in those days.
Oh, yeah. And I remember I recruited a number of members of the Naperville North class of 95 to go to the Ogden $6 Theater. I think it was right before graduation, and we almost filled up the place with people watching Pulp Fiction. And
amazing.
That was probably like my 13th or 14th time.
Well, you know, when you keyed me on that one, it changed my answer.
Oh, boy.
Because I guess that one, because I wanted to make it a contemporary thing. The first answer was a classic old film. This answer is Hair. The movie Hair, the Milos Forman film, came out in 1979. It was my sophomore year, I want to say, of college. And I saw it probably 10 times, not, you know, during its initial run. But the whole point of it, I was bringing people to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made reference to it a couple months ago on that 10 movies that change your life challenge, one of my old college roommates goes back, yeah, I went with you with one of those screenings. So that was it, and it's a good share, because it really, I think, represents where we were at and what we were doing and at what point. So beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is it is such a contrast between the way we watch movies now and the way we watched them back then. You know, we're older and have more responsibilities now and things, so I don't even know if it would occur to us to go see a movie in the theater more than, you know, a couple of times.
Well, I mean, we're in a different place, too.
Right.
I can't even say 10 years ago before I got into this profession that I would have wanted to do that.
Yeah. And now, you know, a movie like Pulp Fiction comes out, even if it does really well, it's still got that... It's a shorter window between the time you see it in the theater and the time you can just invite friends over to watch it on the couch.
Right, which is different. And which, you know, clicking on a digital thing and putting it up on your screen is much different than making the effort to put on your pants. So.
Well, it depends on which friends you're having over. But.
And what kind of party it is. All right.
But there, just one last thing.
That
there
went
is
well.
Yeah, there is something to that, though, the idea of inviting friends to go see it with you in a theater, because you're with other people, strangers, and depending on the movie, you get those great reactions.
Right, and also, too, that's what you're doing. If you invite people over to watch at your house, they may get a little conversation or look at their phone or whatever. You know, it's just not the same.
And they're not coming back over, by the way. You have to respect the church of the theater or the movie-going experience.
See, anyway. I'm even past that, Ian, so...
I know.
But that went well, and tune in next time I'm on to see what Ian's question will be.
Oh, my gosh. I'll think of it 10 seconds before I press record.
Well, I changed my answer, so it's all fair game.
So let's talk about a movie that I wish I'd seen in the theater with a crowd, especially a crowd who'd never seen a trailer or a poster or even a concept for Skidoo.
Skidoo.
Now, you pitched this to me.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, this is funny. I and it's all associative now because it's very weird. I have a stack of DVDs in my entertainment system that I recorded. I had a DVD recorder for the shortest of times. So I just started recording movies off the air, you know, because I had a couple cable stations, Turner Classics. I mean, so one of those movies on one of those discs was Skidoo. So I'm going to make a confession. This morning, as I went to get it, to put it on the spindle, I found that it didn't work in the DVD player I have now, because it's a computer or a generated disc off a DVD recorder. Quite frankly, everybody's moved on.
Oh, yeah.
So
you found another way to watch Skidoo.
Well, you had told me that was on YouTube on Olive Film. So here, put the Amazon up, YouTube. Beautiful print. It was like watching it on a, you know, like a standard DVD, which I was stunned.
Well, here's the thing, and I don't know
about talking about the print first, but but that's how it all came together, because I remembered it from my collection.
And you know, it's one of those frustrating things. You know, before we actually talk about the movie, talk about the way we watched it. You know, I stumbled across it on YouTube, because I always go and check and see, like, do they have clips or a trailer or something. I found the full thing on there.
Yes.
And anyone from Olive who's listening to this might want to go look at YouTube, because it is up there in pristine condition.
And the cat's out of the bag, baby. There's like 7,000 people who've watched it.
Yeah. But and that's the thing, is like, I'm going to own this thing on Blu-ray. I'm going to go buy it.
Ah, very good.
It's disappointing that there aren't any extra features on it, though, so I'm literally just paying for the movie, but I'll do it, because I believe in this
thing. I actually have a suggestion about that, but I won't talk about it on the air.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
I think I just thought of a million questions to ask next
time.
So,
anyway, but I had heard of its reputation as a movie, meaning that it was a LSD movie that starred old-timey people, like, you know, George Raft and Jackie Gleason, Mickey Rooney.
Oh, and R.I.P. Carol Channing. She passed away like 2 weeks ago.
Isn't that amazing? That I mean, the serendipity of seeing Channing in there after she had just passed away at the age of 97. So that this film was 50 years ago. She was even middle-aged. She was 47 years old when she made this picture. And probably it was her last gasp in movies. She made so few movies, and most of them were in the 1960s.
See, here's the thing. You, I bet, have a deeper knowledge base on a lot of what's going on in this movie than I did, because a lot of these folks... Right, but like, I'm looking at this. I mean, I knew Jackie Gleason from The Honeymooners and The Toy, you know, Groucho Marx, of course.
How about Marx? Oh, sad. Well, sadly, it's his last movie, but...
Was it?
Grandly, it's his last movie, too.
Look, I loved Groucho in this movie, but here's the thing. Carol Channing, I knew the name, and I think I'd seen her before, but I didn't have any familiarity with her aside from, you know, name recognition. But she's great in this. What can you recommend as far as Carol Channing for me?
Well, the beautiful thing about Carol Channing is she established a character of herself, meaning the person that she plays in the movie no doubt was the person that lived in real life. There was no acting there. It was just Carol Channing being Carol Channing. And when she developed this persona, she was able to extend her career, because she was, do you know Elaine Stritch?
Again, I know the name.
Well, okay.
Yeah, they did a doc about her a while ago. Yeah.
This... Carol Channing was the woman whose pipes were so great and her looks were good enough that she would always do the stage version before the star took it over in the movie version.
Oh.
This happened to her twice with Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Marilyn Monroe played her part from the Broadway show, Lorelei, and she became signature for Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, but Channing introduced it as a song. She sang it the first night it was on Broadway. So the second one was Hello, Dolly. She originated the stage version of Hello, Dolly, first time it was ever done. And then Barbara, I think that's the one that pissed her off. Not the Marilyn Monroe one necessarily, because she understood she was a stage actress and Monroe was in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But this time they were taking the people from the stage versions and putting them in the movies. And she had to hear about it tragically, and then did Skidoo. So there's a Carol Channing overview.
Well, thank you for that.
That's far too much that I wanted to know about the great Carol Channing.
No, it's not nearly enough. I gotta go do more homework now. This is wonderful. But so let's this movie. You know, when, how many times have you seen it? What's your What's your relationship with Skidoo?
Again, it was a cult movie that I'd always heard was one of the weirdest Hollywood films ever made. Okay, nailed it, by the way. And the second one was it was on Turner Classic.
So had you never seen it? You had just recorded it?
I had just recorded it. This seriously, I'll bring these DVDs in. You can look through them. Just films that I've always wanted to see but never had seen. And now it seems like they're all useless.
See, I'm sorry. I glossed over that. I thought that you would just, in preparation for this, you would just mention you found it, that you had it. This, I didn't know this was the first time that you'd seen it.
Yes.
Wow.
First time I'd seen it.
Okay, this is great. So you had just heard about it, and you're like, yeah, we should talk about this. Okay.
I always go back to my mental notes of those discs inside those places. And I think we got on the subject about 60s movies. I said, Jesus, you know, I've never seen Skidoo. And I've heard about it for years, you know. It's an infamous film.
See, I didn't know anything about it.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And, you know, when you said it was like a drug movie with old Hollywood stars, and I'm kind of intrigued but also rolling my eyes. I'm like, this is going to be like, oh, it's the hippies versus the squares. But it kind of is that.
But
the squares are so crazy.
They outdo the hippies.
They do. And in some ways, the hippies turn out to be have more in common with the squares than the actual squares. Like that brilliant scene where we're jumping ahead here, but you've got a group of hippies like doing this James Bond like coding deduction of where the ship is in the sea. Like, wow.
Well, what amazed me about that scene is that the screenwriter thought that would be an elaborate way to use screen time. You know? The fact that he wrote it on their living room wall, number one, you know, ooh, the hippie.
Yeah.
And then they had the gang over, like a game of charades, to figure out. I mean, I was like, what? I said, this is a good 5 minutes of exposition that completely did not need to be in the movie.
Well, it didn't, but it's so entertaining. It's like this weird, like, dope-smoking Turing machine, you know? So let's rewind the tape, or the A-track, I guess.
Reel-to-reel.
Reel-to-reel, yeah, yes. Sorry. So Jackie Gleason and Carol Channing star as the parents of this daughter named...
Alexandra Hay or Ray.
Okay. See, I just remember her character's name is Darlene.
Darlene, right. Except the way Carol Channing was saying it, I thought she was saying Jarlene. So I was like, Jarlene. All right.
Was that going through your head the entire time you were watching the movie?
No, just it faded quickly. It was just weird because she kept saying Darlene, but in her lisp, it sounded like Jarlene. So.
Now, so they, Gleason plays Tony.
Yes.
Who is, he owns a car wash. And he's very conservative and very, you know, blustery, boisterous guy. And his daughter, the love of his life besides his wife, is dating a hippie. We find out, named Stash.
Stash.
Who's this stoic kind of like Jesus Christ superstar cast-off looking guy. One night, Tony gets a visit from some old colleagues, and it turns out he used to be in like the super mafia to the point where the head of the organization is literally named God.
Yeah.
And he's played by Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
And he lives on a boat in the middle of the ocean because he's super paranoid. And he just runs this operation from this luxury TV radio yacht.
So let me backtrack to one particular scene with Groucho, and I want to get your impression of it.
I don't do impressions.
Yeah. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. He was talking to Stash. He had him on the screen.
Yes.
And he was offering him territories, getting into the youth market. What was he selling? I think it was implied that it was drugs.
That was my impression. And it's so fun because he said, I'll give you $100,000 a year for these territories.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, man. He's like, what? You don't like business, or you don't like money? He says, no, man, I don't like business. And he rolls back over and goes to sleep. The perfect encapsulation of the hippies versus system ideal.
Well,
the
hippies were somewhat subdued, but they did like the body paint.
Oh, yes.
Which I think was the biggest, most salacious thing about the movie, probably.
Yeah, I mean, and in a nice high definition, like it was...
It was something.
It was. You know, they do the classic hippie commune thing where they're all in a bus. And I loved the detail that there were two of them making out on a mattress. And the cops come over and tell them to move. And they're like, no, man, we still have 40 minutes. They paid for a parking spot.
A parking meter. Where it cost a nickel for 2 hours.
But so Big Tony gets recruited back into the life for, quote-unquote, one last job. He needs to go knock off a high-level snitch inside prison,
right,
who I guess is about to bring God down or something, or he just betrayed the organization, so he has to go. And this guy is played by Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
So
he plays like a stockbroker.
I kind of got lost in the plot there. Like,
well,
what he did.
I would assume that he was a stockbroker who got involved with the mob.
Okay.
And then, you know, started to do cheating on the stock market.
Is that what he was doing? Okay.
That's what I assumed.
Because at one point,
he was
Groucho
still
called
rich,
him a stool
you know,
pigeon.
He still had, you know, a guard who came in with his drink in the middle of the afternoon. And
so the way he's going to get to this guy is he has to go to prison.
Right.
So God arranges for him to go to the big house where he meets other members of the organization, most notably Frank Gorshin.
The Batman connection was amazing in this movie. You had Frank Gorshin. You had Burgess Meredith. You had Otto Preminger, who played Mr. Freeze, directing the picture. You had...
Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero, thank you. And... I don't know. I think that was the last.
But yeah, that was the major Batman villain.
Yeah, there was all the villains. I mean, you know, if Frank Gorshin and John Astin had appeared together, now that would have been something. Both Riddlers.
Oh,
but anyway.
And that's the thing is, again, I don't have an appreciation for Frank Gorshin really outside of the Batman series. I mean, I used to love him as the Riddler, but seeing him play, and him and Mickey Rooney playing these...
Right.
It's almost like they're playing in a serious movie. They're playing heavies in a legit film, which just brings this extra level of wow to Skidoo. Because they're not over the top. I mean,
no.
Gorshin is like straight up kind of scary.
Well, Gorshin was an impressionist, and that's where he made his mark. Famously, he was on the episode of the Ed Sullivan Show where the Beatles made their debut. On February 9th. Is today February 9th?
It is. That's tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Okay, so that's the anniversary of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Oh, my gosh.
Which would be...
64. That's
55 years.
Wow.
Holy God.
The stars are aligning.
Gorshin was on that show, you know, and his maniacal craziness is what got him roles. He is famously also... He plays a jazz musician in Where the Boys Are, 1960, if you want to... Go to another Frank Gorshin film.
I've heard of the adult version, which is Where the Boys Aren't.
Well, they remade a. They did a soft porn version of it, Where the Boys Are 84. And I do believe it was one of. It was in the midst of all those sex comedies.
It should have been Where the Boys Are 69. Anyway,
that was the boys in the band. All right.
Yikes. He's in jail. Meanwhile. What was Carol Channing's character's name in this movie?
Flo.
Flo, okay. She is uncertain as to where her husband has gone, right? Or is she trying to find the...
Well, he kind of just disappears in the middle of the night, literally. She's moaning somebody else's name in bed as he leaves, which I thought was funny. And then you know, Gleason goes to Pier 17, which is a very key location. And he just disappears.
Yeah, it's the old Pier 17, yeah.
But they figure it out because he was in the mob, and they know where he's at, you know, or know who has him.
And Carol Channing goes to see Angie, yeah. who is the sort of the newer, the younger generation mobster. Now, help me out here, because
Frankie Avalon, sir.
Thank you. Half this movie, and I actually know who Frankie Avalon was, mostly because of Back to the Beach.
but he was playing essentially the role in Back to the Beach that he played for literally 7 years in the 60s.
Well, what blew my mind is I'm watching this movie, I'm thinking, wait, is that Frankie Avalon playing a mobster with a weird pencil mustache? So I went to IMDb, and I'm like, wait.
Yes, indeed.
Well, here's the rub, as they say in the mob movies. He was not credited as being in Skidoo. I looked on the IMDb. I'm like, I don't see Frankie Avalon on there. Or no, I'm sorry, I didn't look at the Skidoo credits. I looked at his filmography, and it wasn't listed on there.
Wow.
I actually have to look at the cast for Skidoo and see if it's him, because
he is listed in the cast on the Wikipedia page.
Okay, because I think I ended up Googling it or something, and it turned up it was him. But for three quarters of the movie, it was bugging me. I'm like, that has to be Frankie Avalon. There's no way.
Well, I didn't recognize him at first, but I think as the film went on, it was like, oh, that's obviously. Well, the extended scene where he was in his apartment with all the gadgets.
Oh, that one of the great comedy scenes.
In her bra and panties.
Yes.
Thank you for those completists of Carol Channing. You must see this movie.
Well,
I was kind of shocked about that, I have to say.
I didn't know enough to be shocked, but I'm like, oh, I guess we're going there.
We're going mother-daughter. Okay. Okay,
well,
Frankie.
I kind of...
Bring it in a net, and you'll have something to watch.
How do you think he captured them? With a net. Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
man.
I know. It's terrible. But what... This movie is so crazy that I was convinced that he was going to try and get a mother-daughter thing going on, because Flo goes to find Tony at Angie's apartment. Darlene shows up first.
She pops up in bra and panties. She's on the bed, and the daughter is like, this is another day at the beach.
Yes.
You know, she's not shocked.
Oh, Mom.
And that's why I thought, okay, mother-daughter thing coming right now, baby.
But, yeah, so, like, Flo shows up first, right? And she's like, where's my husband and all this? And then he's like, I've got a girl coming over. You got to get out of here. And then Darlene shows up. Angie presses some buttons on his big remote-controlled doohickey that controls the mood lighting and the music and everything. It transforms the elaborate bed into this really posh James Bond desk suite, which I want in my house.
Isn't that great?
It was great. So Mom disappears into the floor in this giant bed. Darlene comes in. The girl that Angie was expecting to see calls on the intercom, and he turns her away.
A frowsy brunette with arthritis.
But then Darlene turns Angie down, and she's like, I'm not here for that. I just want to find my dad. And he's like, I can't believe I sent that girl away. I've been working on her for 6 weeks. Like a real scumbag.
Oh, yeah. This is not politically correct film at all.
Mm-mm.
You Me Too people might want to skip this one. But, but that's what the shocking thing, too, was that... Why did Groucho agree to do this? I guess he knew Preminger. But that, number one. Number two, there was a lot of money spent on this movie.
Was there?
Well, you had those elaborate sets that converted into other things. Those had to be custom built.
Yeah.
And then you had a boat that you were filming on. And then you had that elaborate balloon scene at the end. And I'm like... This had to come in about $10 million back in those days.
On top of the stars, yeah.
I didn't look up the budget, but I was like, there's a lot going on, and they have to do it all by hand. There's no computer stuff here.
Well, yeah, and I don't know how much the stars were getting paid on this, if they got paid what they were worth, points or something, or did they even do points back then?
I would think this was all straight salary, and I'm sure Groucho got, $200,000-$400,000 just for that appearance.
Yeah. And it was worth it. I want to go back to that.
I'd love to see the line item on that. I don't know why. It just fascinated me that there was so much in this movie.
I want to jump to that balloon scene. There's a couple of things to talk about in prison, but we'll jump to the balloon
scene.
They're
going to escape from prison. Gleason and his roommates, Austin Pendleton and Michael Constantine, who was a rapist, by the way.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you want to talk about a lack of PC.
they want to escape from the prison. They're in there to kill Packer, but they're going to escape. So we can go from there.
Yes. The way they escape is Jackie Gleason is mailing a letter, I think, to his daughter or his wife.
Oh,
and he licks the envelope, but he had borrowed it from Austin Pendleton. He's like, wait, don't. And he's like, why not? He's like, that's laced with acid. And you get to see a Jackie Gleason acid trip.
Yeah.
Which, aside from the kind of dodgy, you know, green screenish projection stuff that they did, it's really wonderful
the way they did this scene. I think you nailed it when you said, if you can imagine Jackie Gleason having an acid trip. I think they came pretty damn close in this.
Yeah.
I have to say, given the characters that has already flowed through the story. But you haven't lived until you've seen Groucho Marx on the top of a screw turning like like he's in a wax museum and then going down the drain. You haven't lived till you've seen that.
Yeah,
this is serious, folks. This was part of the movie. And really well done special effects. They had to pay for those too.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like an acid trip version of Fantastic Voyage, you know, the kind of thing that you just want to see it on the big screen. it's beautiful.
I think the next time it comes to the Music Box.
Have they done Skidoo?
I don't think they have. They should.
We should start a petition.
Well, that's part of it.
But so there's this acid trip, and then they kind of realize that that's a way that they can get out of prison is they spike the cabbage with hallucinogens on the day that the warden and the governor are all coming to do this publicity thing where it's like, we're going to show that we can eat with the grunts kind of a thing.
Well, the way they do it is so bizarre, too. Pendleton comes into the kitchen, opens a big mixer, and throws all the envelopes in, which the glue is laced with the LSD.
Yes.
Now, I was thinking to myself, what's the concentration there when you have a prison yard of 400 people? Is that enough acid, apparently, to get everybody tripping?
Well, I don't know how much you really need.
I don't know.
I mean, like, because typically you see it's like the little tabs and, you know, so maybe if you measure the length of an envelope sealer, you get enough to, I don't know.
Right. If you put those in the tabs, that probably makes about 40 or so, and he put a whole stationary set in, which I don't know. That would affect the taste of the food, too. I mean, you're having
food.
Coleslaw, and suddenly there's paper in it. I'm not eating it.
like they'd know the difference at that point.
I guess.
It's jail food, right? But then
it was odd.
But they put together while everybody's tripping out.
Was he in Alcatraz, by the way?
I don't know.
At the end, it seemed like they were taking off from Alcatraz in the balloon when they were escaping.
But then weren't they in, was that, I thought they were flying over New York or something. I don't
San
know.
San Francisco.
Oh, okay. I'm geographically illiterate, and I was also tired while I was watching this movie.
No. It's you could miss it. Because you forget in the craziness that goes on in this movie. By the end, you're like, I don't even know where this is set anymore. I mean, easily, but I have to say, okay.
Oh no, I was
let's talk about Gleason's acid trip because I think that's what we're really on right now.
We are on a trip, that's for sure. But I wanted to talk about the balloon thing too.
Well, yeah, that comes after.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it sort of precipitates the balloon thing. That's why he wants to escape.
Yeah,
because he wants to see his daughter.
Oh yeah, but it's a revelatory trip. He
right.
has a breakthrough.
Right.
About
he
his
loses
life.
His ego.
Yeah, he loses his ego. And he realizes what's really important in his
he
life.
He realizes he should never have threatened Alice in that way.
I love like his first scene in the movie where he meets Stash, and Stash gets knocked out, and Gleason drops an F-bomb, and not the F-U-bomb, if you know what I'm talking about. Nice and casual, the way they did.
Right. It was
the old school homophobes.
Yes, right. It's the descriptive for a gay man.
Yes.
Starring with F.
Yeah. But it's just...
That was wild. That was kind of shocking, I have to say.
And yeah, I wasn't quite ready for it.
Right.
It seemed like he was very comfortable saying that. But, yeah.
That's when the latent homosexuals are getting angry, I guess.
Well.
Look it up. It's Freud.
But no, so it was what I loved about the acid sequence. You know, it's not completely subjective because you cut out of it to see, you know, in the jail cell what the cellmates are seeing and like right. watching him stare down the drain. Right. And you, Austin well, Pendleton is kind of like guiding him through it, like talking about, oh, he's experiencing this now, or now he's losing his ego. And it's a very gentle kind of guided trip. It's like watching a science experiment.
And Pendleton was perfectly cast in this movie. But I have to say, if anybody knows Austin Pendleton. But the beginning of it with the eyeballs were the freakiest thing to me.
The mattress, the bunk above him.
Yes, the bunk above him became eyeballs. But Groucho Marx on the top of a screw is, you know, you can't beat anything in the ranking of what he saw with that. I mean, that's it. Especially when it goes down the drain. I thought, that is so brilliant.
It is, and I would love to know the storyboarding process of this, because someone, you know, there are meetings about, no, it should be on a head, and the head should go down on a screw and go down the drain.
Well, the original screenplay to me, apparently the original screenplay would have to be, and then then Tony has a trip. So
they fill in the blanks later.
Yeah, they had to bring in Rob Reiner to write hippie dialogue and probably drop acid and tell him what he saw, and that was it. You know, I mean, again, they had the little heads floating around, which were amazing too, and they would come up, zoom up, and then go back in their place, almost like if they were on one of those current meeting things like Zoom.
Oh yeah,
you know, if you're ever on Zoom, mm-hmm. the person who's talking comes up and then goes back, and it's Brady Bunch Box.
Yeah,
I used that for the first time last weekend.
I mostly use like WebEx and BlueJeans and those kinds of stuff, like the meeting things.
Okay,
and that, those can get kind of trippy too. Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, that's I say what you want, but that is one of the weirdest 8 minutes of film I've virtually ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and it's,
I mean, it is.
It is, and it's there's a lot of imagination to it. There's also a lot of story going on in it, because I'll be honest, let's talk about the very opening scene of this movie.
Genius, I have to say.
It's genius in retrospect. And this, when I watch it again, I think I'll appreciate it more, because
yes.
I was just having flashbacks, no pun intended, to Easy Rider, which is a movie I've not watched since my dad made me watch it when I was, 14.
Okay.
And I was bored out of my mind.
Oh, yeah. It's very difficult when you see it the first time.
But watching Skidoo, the opening 5 minutes is just a static shot of a television with weird commercials running on it. And then you start to see the context of, like, Carol Channing and Jackie Gleason, switching back and forth.
That's one of the best openings for a film, I think. It has to be one of the most creative. I mean, best is always a subjective term.
Sure.
But I'll just say creative. It's just amazingly creative. And it was done analog. It was done, they're changing channels with old remotes. And I don't know how they got the specific stuff on there. They green screened it because it was...
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah,
it looks like a little bit of a cutout.
Right.
But yeah, like the titles of, the Skidoo title with the little cartoon jail guy... You see that on the big screen,
right.
And then all of a sudden you see it in the TV, and then it switches to commercials and all that.
Well, I was like expecting too a great Pink Panther type opening with the dancing inmates and the flowers and the flower power, and then it becomes the TV.
Yeah, and they're crazy weird commercials for like cigarettes and booze and like these pills that will do everything for you. Yeah, and guns.
It was sex and cigarettes and booze and guns.
Yeah.
Which I say, hey, America hasn't changed that much, quite frankly.
Oh, and then these great it's like 6 congressional hearings, and the response is always like, I will not answer that question on the grounds it might incriminate me.
I see you're heavily bandaged. What bandages? Well, it says here you were shot 23 times. I don't know what you're talking about.
It reminded me of that scene in the testimony in Godfather 2.
I know that's not Corleone in Crime Family,
Or the Black Knight in the Holy Grail.
Oh,
it's just a flesh wound.
Oh, so good. But that's the thing, is like I was afraid that it was going to be... I mean, I got what it was doing towards the end of it. Because at first, I thought it was just weird old commercials. And I realized, oh, no, these are really messed up commercials.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie... really does move and flow. There, even the acid trip, which could have been,
been
very, very long 8 minutes.
No,
it's beautifully done.
I, But well, let's talk about the end sequence where Carol Channing comes in a boat. Now, again, as Ian said earlier, God lives on a boat. God, played by Groucho Marx, the head mafia guy, lives. We don't even know he's mafia. Yeah, who knows what this is?
Yeah,
it could have been God himself. And they were going to heaven. They were taking the boats to heaven. But anyway.
Oh yeah, there's characters all over this movie saying, "Where is God? I want to find God."
The Skidoo.
Yes.
And as she's singing, for one thing, she brings on what looks like a rock band. Okay, so it's a bunch of hippies. They have guitars, and it's a brass arrangement. It's like a classical arrangement of the song, meaning that there's no guitars whatsoever. So they're following her, and Skidoo, da 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 da, Skidoo, da 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 da. I mean, it was like, and everything else happened. Apart from her singing, everything was still happening in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, Gleason was going around doing what he was doing while she's singing Skidoo in his face.
Yeah, well, what I loved about that is Gleason is coming onto the boat, you know, looking for, I think, his daughter, and then he's trying to find God, and you think they're going to have, like, this big showdown or something.
Right.
But it ends up, you know, Flo...
He never finds God.
Right, but Flo kind of pulls him aside, and, you know, they end up, like, making out in, you know, one of the rooms.
So
what's really important...
saying there is no God, but there is sex?
I prefer to think of it as that... there's no way to look at it, which is that this obsession that Gleason had with finding God and getting his revenge on him squaring things was not nearly as important as the reason he broke out of jail in the first place, which was to go back and be with his family,
right?
And you know, rekindle this relationship with his wife. Which when it's the movie starts out, they're in this terrible rut. They're fighting over television
with Arnold Stang.
Hmm.
The guy who played his assistant was the great Arnold Stang.
Oh, the guy with wash.
He's an old-timey character actor. The only reason I know that is I looked him up because I've seen him in 100 movies. But, you know, like especially during the 50s and 60s, he did a lot of sitcom stuff too in the 60s.
Hmm.
So, you'd see him on Gomer Pyle or something. But anyway, he had that very distinctive voice, had a big career in radio. And I was thinking to myself, because he was Gleason's assistant, but it turned out he was his mob partner too.
Yeah.
So they both got out of it at the same time. But it seems like this guy had been at his elbow for 17 years while he was married to Carol Channing. He got out because he married Carol Channing and she was 3 months pregnant. And thus they have a teenage daughter.
And I love the flashback where they show their first job or their last job? It's in black and white. It's like this Keystone Cops bank robbery. And I didn't.
Brilliant.
And she was. I don't think I realized, but yeah, she was like driving the getaway car.
Oh my
so
god!
So you kind of get this idea that maybe he's the mob guy and he's trying to keep things quiet from his wife. But no, she was totally in on it.
Well, and also too, they did it so extreme. They did it like a 1920s gangster movie,
yeah.
Like Public Enemy or something. And so, in its extremity, it's like, this is either a really great satire or they just did it straight and it became satire. I don't know. Well, that's what it is with Skidoo. You don't know what level it's working on. And as you think about all the symbolic elements of it, it could have been God was God.
Yeah, it very much...
I mean,
yeah. And I love what it says about hypocrisy. Because before we see that flashback, before we know that Tony was in the mob, he's just this businessman who's got this beautiful house and this, you know, kind of trophy wife, I guess. And he's very conservative and he hates hippies. And so you got this idea of him as being this crazy, staunch conservative guy.
Right.
But throughout the movie, you start to find out, no, he was a criminal. He had this wild youth where he's like knocking over banks and probably killing people.
Yeah.
And so he's not as, you know, timid and Mr. All-American values
as
you might think.
And Arnold Stang was his sidekick, and you see him in the flashback as well.
Yeah.
But there's also an implication that Stang was the father of the child. That's
there,
part of the
yeah,
revelation.
There was.
Because he was sitting with the bullet in his head during the acid flashback, and he said, "I think she was my child." You know, that it happens.
I forgot about that detail.
This is part of his acid flashback.
And but maybe that maybe that was part of him letting go of his ego, because he may have always wondered.
Oh my God!
He could have. Right. That could have just been an artifact of paranoia.
That's. I mean, that's exactly it. The artifact of paranoia, because he thought that. I don't think it was like Stang didn't say it to him. I think he thought that.
Yeah.
Because they were together. They were always together.
Yeah, and you know, his wife is like calling out other guys' names in her sleep. You know, she might have been totally faithful and just had this rich fantasy life. We don't know. No. There's a lot of questions. You have an entire series about this marriage leading up to Skidoo. But what I was getting back to, the hypocrisy of him having all these all-American values, and then being brought back into this life of crime and seeing that all unravel. And you see that conflict in him, like, this isn't who I am anymore. I'm different. I'm a legit businessman. Like, no, you're really not. You're the same guy that you've always been. So stop blaming those damn dirty hippies for just being free the way that you wish you could be now.
Well, you know, and again, that was a big part of that conflict back then, that the hippies were eschewing everything that their parents built. The picket fences, the houses, the cars, the, you know, the washing machines. You know, it was like, it got to be all too much, and it came to a head during the Vietnam split. And Groucho also says, there's a billion people under 25 right now. If I can hit that market, I'll make $1 billion a year.
Yeah.
So... It's like my Groucho was much better the last time. I forgive everybody. But anyway, and it was another thing about Groucho. He was playing Groucho from the Marx Brothers days. He finally put the mustache back on, the grease paint mustache, which was shocking. And somebody, like, they either he's wearing a wig or a piece, but he's has jet black hair and the Groucho mustache, 77 years old. And he pulled it off. It was exactly like
the Groucho. I can't believe it was 77. Yeah,
I know when crazy. I read that. And it's his last film. It's the last time he was put to celluloid. So just for that, I was grateful to see it historically.
Yeah. Let's jump ahead.
Hysterically.
Let's jump ahead to the balloon, because I think we're just about
would
at time.
Would you like to fly? I wish they would have had the fifth dimension, like on the boat. Would you like to fly in my beautiful balloon?
I'm not paying for that.
That'll be a clip. I'm not paying for that. Shut up.
But they make their prison escape. You've got everyone from the warden to the inmates to the guys on the watchtower tripping on acid.
What was the... Yes, everybody's tripping because they've all eaten the tainted gold slaw.
Yeah. I love the one guy in the watchtower. His version of an acid trip is seeing people in the prison yard as the Green Bay Packers playing naked football.
Oh my God, and it was so... I was like, this had to flip everybody out back in 68, because it's flipping me out right now.
It's like,
I'm going to isolate that clip and send it to my Green Bay Packer fans. Every time they make a Green Bay reference, I'm going to put that clip up.
The subtext has subtext.
Oh my God! Amazing.
But they escape by fashioning a hot air balloon
out of
it was the bags of cabbage, frozen cabbage, and three garbage cans, and they used something for the fire propulsion. I can't remember how they got lift, but they take off, and there's this beautiful shot of them flying, I guess, over San Francisco, and you've got, you know, Austin Pendleton is kind of tripping out and enjoying the vibes, and Jackie Gleason is paranoid and all bug-eyed because he doesn't want to crash.
Look out for that bridge!
And then they get...
I can't do a Gleason.
And then you got the henchmen on God's boat, like, shooting at them with pistols and Tommy guns or whatever it is.
Wow. That was wild, too, because Groucho, he had 9 crewmen. It's 9 against 1. They're going to kill me, or whatever his line was. The odds are 9 against 1. But anyway, they all have, like, guns, and they're shooting at the... I'm like, somebody's going to get hit with flak. You know, I was like, it was crazy, but they managed to get on board. And that was the wildest thing. Was that in the original script? They will escape by balloon, and they will land on God's boat in the middle of the ocean.
I don't know. Again, I would like... Yeah, I'd like to find the script for Skidoo. It's got to be out there somewhere. That's why I'm kind of bummed that when I went to look this up for the Olive release, there were no features. Like, you could do a documentary about this, a commentary by some film historian. I would love to see some context for this.
Let us volunteer to do the commentary for
Okay. For Skidoo, the big anniversary. What, right. Did that pass already? What year was this?
Last year was 55. So I'm not going to wait till 60. Bring it out. Bring out the 69th year edition. I don't know.
Woohoo! Yeah,
I'm
so glad that you recommended this. It was the first time for both of us.
Yes.
And it became one of my, as with a lot of the movies we talk about, it's become one of my favorite movies. It's in the pantheon now.
Oh, that's great, man.
I would this is the kind of movie, if it was out now, well, I would be bringing my friends to the theater to watch it.
Right, and also, too, I will say that, and going back to the original question, it's the thing about cinema that always is refreshing for me is that despite how many things I've seen and how many experiences I've had in this business, there is still something on screen that can move me or shock me or bring out that wild-eyed boy that went to see Hair 10 times back in 1979. So that's the great thing about cinema. And Skidoo is right in that ballpark. By the end, I'm like, I was glad I didn't die before I saw this, because this definitely has to be in your wheelhouse if you're a cinema buff, because it's just that strange.
And you can't get any more of a solid endorsement than that. So exactly. I think that's a perfect place to end it. Thank
you. Perfect.